Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link, bringing you top stories from across the continent. I'm Crispin Wakideo in Bonn, Germany. In this edition, South Africans share their concern as Mandela spends Christmas in hospital.
It's very sad that he's been in hospital like so many times now. It's very sad, and we would like him to be out very soon because we really love him.
A Zimbabwean teenage musician lends his efforts in the fight against HIV/AIDS with a campaign song but refuses any profits from it. And food shortages hit Cameroonians living next to the Nigerian border after Boko Haram threats forced authorities to close part of the border. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Down but not out. South Africa's presidential spokesman Mark Maharaj on Wednesday issued a statement saying there were no new updates on Mandela's condition. On Tuesday, President Zuma said Mandela, who is currently hospital, was looking much better and in high spirits. Madiba, as he is fondly referred to in South Africa, has been admitted at an undisclosed Pretoria hospital since December the 8th. He was diagnosed with a lung infection and also underwent gallstone surgery. His current stay in hospital is his longest since he was freed from prison over two decades ago. Our correspondent in South Africa, Subri Govende, has more details.
During the dark days of the struggles against apartheid, South Africans used to sing vigorously, loudly, and without any fear for the release of Nelson Mandela from prison. Now, 22 years after his release, and after leading South Africans to political freedom in 1994, the people are praying that the 94-year-old freedom icon will leave a Pretoria hospital bed in a fully recovered condition. Since the 8th of December, Nelson Mandela has been receiving treatment for a chronic lung infection and has had gallstones removed. He has not been allowed to leave hospital to spend Christmas with his family.
It's very sad that he's been in a hospital like so many times now. It's very sad, and we would like him to be out very soon because we really love him. We love him and we adore him a lot. He's done great things for our country, so to see him suffering like this, it's hurting. It's really hurting.
Nelson Mandela has been our hero and the father of the country, and we're really sad that he's in the hospital at the moment, and we wish him the best of luck and the speediest recovery possible.
We hope that Dada gets better soon and returns home to his family. He's definitely a leader that everybody looks up to, no matter irrespective of what color or race or culture.
This is the second time in 2012 that Mandela has been admitted to hospital. Early in February, he was admitted to a hospital in Johannesburg for abdominal pain and lung infection. Previously, he has received treatment for an enlarged prostate gland, tuberculosis, and an eye infection. Since his latest hospitalization, Mandela has been visited at least three times by President Jacob Zuma, his grandson Mandla Mandela, his wife Mrs. Gracia Machel, and other close members of his family. Zuma and the government have called on South Africans to pray for his recovery, and the latest communication is that Mandela has now made some recovery. Presidential spokesperson Mac Maraj has been keeping South Africa and the world updated on Mandela's condition over the past 3 weeks.
The doctors are happy with the progress that former President Mandela is making. He is in hospital, as you know, since the 8th of December. He's in good spirits, and the doctors are quite comfortable with the way things are developing.
Asked when it was likely that the former president would be discharged from hospital, Maraj said it was up to the doctors to make the decision.
This is a question that's entirely in the hands of the doctors. And what they have said to us is that they want to be sure that he's made sufficient progress in his recovery before they consider his discharge from hospital. I think it's something we all wish for him. We'd like him to be with his family, but at the same time, we'd like him to recover as well as possible.
The Zuma government has, over the past 3 weeks, been criticized by the media and the general public for not disclosing necessary details concerning Mandela's hospitalization. But the government has repeatedly made it clear that it wants to protect the former president so that he could make a full recovery without the interference and inconvenience of the media and the public. Both local and the international media have been camping at two medical facilities in Pretoria since his latest hospitalization. Zuma's repeated calls on South Africans to pray for Mandela's recovery have heightened fears on whether the former freedom icon will make a full recovery.
Subri Govender reporting from South Africa. Nelson Mandela retired from active politics in 1994. 10 years later, at the age of 85, as his health declined, he announced that he would be retiring from public life to enjoy more time with his family in his hometown village of Kunu. So why is his health status still such a highly kept state secret? I put that question to Daniel Silke, an independent political analyst in Cape Town.
I think the international recognition of Nelson Mandela, coupled with the venerated status that he enjoys here in South Africa, the fact that he really is the founding father figure of the post-apartheid South Africa, I think makes him a global commodity in news media terms. And clearly, from a South African point of view, there is a great concern about his own health, his own personal position. And I think the South African government have been very keen to be as protective as they can about him. They've had some, I think, unfortunate mishaps with the press over the course of the last few years. They haven't handled some of his previous illnesses too well. And given the global interest in Mr. Mandela, I think that they are trying to be a lot more professional this time around, but at the same time, keep him a little away from the public scrutiny that really goes with his stature as one of the great politicians over the last century.
Do you think that Nelson Mandela himself supports these measures by the government to protect him from the international media and people who really are concerned about him?
Some degree of protecting Mr. Mandela is certainly necessary given the media circuses that we've seen in South Africa over the last few years. Not all the fault of the media, I might add, in some instances, the fault of very bad communication by the South African government. But I would argue that Mr. Mandela is a unique figure in the world, holds a unique place in the hearts of South Africans and, for that matter, those across the world. And the interest in him is unprecedented. So I think that there does need to be some circumspection in the way that he is dealt with by the media. And on the basis of that, I would certainly support him being protected, in that sense, having his family protected from the global media scrutiny. But clearly this needs to be done professionally, and it needs to also put South Africa in a positive light. And I think the current South African government continue to learn on the job as to how to accomplish this.
And behind the background of Mandela's health condition, was there any difference in how South Africans celebrated their Christmas this season?
Now, I think South Africans really are celebrating Christmas in the usual traditional way. But I think clearly there is an understanding that this is the longest spell that Mr. Mandela has ever had in hospital. At 94, he's more vulnerable and frail than he ever has been.
But does he still have any influence in South Africa's politics?
I think that on a day-to-day basis, he doesn't. I think he's been out of the political fray for some time. He is seen as an elder statesman, someone who is respected by all South Africans, whether they supported his political party or not. He is credited with saving South Africa, together with F.W. de Klerk, from some sort of racial abyss during the early 1990s. But beyond that, his role has really been historical rather than contemporary.
Independent political analyst Daniel Silke in Cape Town.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Boko Haram's ripple effect. An acute food shortage has gripped parts of Cameroon that share a common border with Nigeria. The shortage comes after Cameroonian authorities closed parts of the border, citing security threats from Nigeria's Islamist sect Boko Haram. Cameroonians living next to the border import more than 80% of their foodstuff from Nigeria. The move is likely to affect end-of-year parties in Cameroon that are usually marked with a lot of feasting. From Yaoundé, Moki Kinzeka reports.
Cameroonians traditionally celebrate end-of-year feast days with lots of eating, drinking, dancing and exchanging gifts. but the year 2012 has been a difficult one for them as a result of the high prices for basic commodities. Some of the people on the streets of Marwa, the capital of the far north region of the country, shared their experiences.
The prices are skyrocketing every day and every day.
The prices remain embarrassingly high. When you go to some shops where you saw an item on which was written 3,000 francs, that's about 2-3 weeks back. You find the same item now is noted on it about 4,500 francs or 5,000.
Seems prices rise like every day. Most times you go to the market, you buy at a certain price. The next day, the prices just change and you find it difficult to make a budget because you are not sure what price you're going to meet in the market when you next go there.
Prices of goods are said to have increased by 70%. Cameroon, which imports more than 80% of its basic commodities through Nigeria, kept its border with its neighbor under strict surveillance because of reports that the sect Boko Haram was recruiting new supporters, especially from the northern regions of Cameroon. Traders no longer have easy access to both countries. Some Cameroonian traders at Limani, the border town with Nigeria, told me that they were no longer ready to buy from the West African country. Mbwake Honore is one of them.
Going there means being in danger. You know, Boko Haram don't know how to distinguish the person they want to kill. You can go there and you can be a victim.
Surveillance of the border between the two countries has come with its own consequences, especially for Cameroon, that largely depends on imports of basic commodities from Nigeria. To counter this, the government of Cameroon, in partnership with some traders, now import basic commodities to supply areas where scarcity of basic commodities is much felt. The Minister of Trade, Luc Magram-Barga Atangana, says the initiative is yielding positive results.
I can say it loud that the products are available at any place, and also the price this year are particularly interesting.
Much as the government claims that the prices are fair and the goods are available on the market, some people do not agree. It is the wish of many Cameroonians that their government should discuss with the government of Nigeria and find long-lasting solutions that will ease movement between the two countries. Failure to do it will mean difficult moments for Cameroonians, not only during the end-of-year feast, but also in their daily lives.
Moki Kinzeka with that report from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Behind the headlines.
Want a bride? Here's the price tag. In the traditional African setup, the primary function of bride price was to bind two families together. It was a symbolic gesture to the bride's parents as a way of saying thank you for allowing the groom to marry their daughter. Unlike in the past, when the bride price was paid in kind, such as cows, jewelry, or other valuable items, many African families are now demanding huge sums of money for their daughters. This has led some men to interpret the dowry, or lobola as is known in Zambia, as a payment that gives them ownership of their wives. From Lusaka, Kathy Sikombe takes us behind the headlines.
Here in Zambia, the steady increase in the bride price has affected the way many men look at their wives. In olden days, the bride price was used as a token of appreciation for the bride's family and, in some cases, involved a minimal amount. However, in the last 5 years, the bride price has risen tremendously. According to the Zambian Ministry of Finance, increasing economic hardships, with over 64% of the population living on less than $2 a day, have also affected people's feelings about lobola. An increasing number of ethnic groups that previously did not practice lobola now do. The reason is simple: money. Prices paid for wives range from $600 to $6,000. In general, the more educated a woman is, the higher the price that is paid for her. At the same time, cases of gender-based violence continue to rise as documented by the Ministry of Gender and Development. For Director Lucy Lungu, this is also in part due to the high price of lobola. Men feel that paying a high price automatically gives them the right to treat their wives as they see fit.
As much as we talk about gender-based violence, we make an emphasis on violence against women and children. These seem to be increasing quite a lot. And especially, to be specific, sexual gender-based violence seems to be very, very high.
Tawonga Mwale is a 36-year-old single woman. She agrees that the high bride price has a negative impact on young people.
Some prices are exaggerated because some parents would put like really high prices, and that would make your spouse or the person to be a husband, like it would confuse them, like it's too much. And some people would actually be scared and won't want to pay.
Bright Sinkala is a married man and father of four. He thinks the practice should be symbolic and not an additional source of income for families.
There must be a nominal payment towards the marriage, because what I believe in is that it is the success of that marriage, not where you, more like you are selling somebody. I'm very much against with that.
I also spoke to Friday Mlenga, who is a marriage counselor and a historian. He explained how some advances women have made, such as getting a better education, are often misused by their families to demand a higher price.
Whereas in the past it was like a token, that was all right, because even the value placed on the daughters wasn't much. You know, they were just expected to get married right away. But now, that's not the case. Daughters go to school. They get polished up. Because they've educated you, they've spent it, they've invested in you, they want to get a return. That's all.
Lobola has become a hot topic in internet chat forums in Zambia and other African countries, with some users just interested in finding out what the going rate is, while others argue that it's outdated and has no place in the modern world. But for the time being, the practice seems firmly entrenched in Zambian society.
Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka. And now to Zimbabwe, where the fight against HIV/AIDS has gathered momentum. A teenage musician has released a song titled Getting to Zero, which urges fellow youths to fight the spread of HIV in his country. The song's message is in line with UNAIDS' goal of ensuring zero rate of new HIV infections by 2015. The young artist also says he does not expect any payment in return for the song. Zimbabwe has achieved one of the sharpest declines in HIV prevalence in southern Africa, from around 27% in 1997 to just over 14% in 2010. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
If you believe and I believe, we together pray.
That is Getting to Zero, a song by a 19-year-old Zimbabwean, Theophilus Folin, better known as Theo. The title of the song coincides with the theme for the 2012 World AIDS Day, which was marked on December the 1st. I asked Theo what exactly the title means.
It's about the three zeros, which is the theme for World AIDS Day for this year, getting to zero discrimination and stigma against people living with HIV, zero new infections and zero deaths.
There is another zero which Theo did not mention in that answer. He expects zero payment for the song. He wants it played on radio and distributed for free. Most other young musicians in Zimbabwe sing about love, sex, and other light social issues. Why has he chosen to sing about HIV and expect no payment for it?
I saw a need and I knew that I could do something to contribute to kind of making a difference and someone else's life. I mean, as artists in general, we've got a platform whereby we can talk to people and express our mindsets on certain things. And I just found it appropriate for me to be able to speak to other young people out there to say, look, it is possible for us to get to zero. If you get involved and I get involved, it is very much possible.
Get involved seemed to be the buzzword now among youths in Zimbabwe. With statistics showing more than 14% of Zimbabweans between the ages of 15 and 49 live with the HIV virus, many young people now want to play a meaningful role in fighting the spread of the disease. One way they can do this, they say, is if they become actively involved in policy making. A group of young Zimbabweans have been trying to convince the government to let them join the effort to bring down the HIV rate to zero by 2015. 23-year-old Yokai Mutazo is from the Young People's Network on Sexual Reproductive Health, HIV/AIDS.
What we want is to be involved in an initiative that would help in the development of this country. Anything for the youth, without the youth, is against the youth.
It is not yet clear whether that message has been heard by Zimbabwean officials, but the youths are certainly listening to the message of Theo that Zimbabwe, decimated by HIV infections, must get zero rate new infections. With the United Nations saying the rate of new HIV infections in Zimbabwe has dropped by 50%, that gives hope to young artists like Theophilus Folin. But with 1.2 million people living with the virus, there is still a long way to go.
Getting to zero. It's time for zero. Zero stick. Zero discrimination. Zero new HIV infection. Zero parents to child. Zero deaths among people. Zero HIV deaths among people living with HIV.
The song Getting to Zero, ending that report by Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
Opinion.
In this week's Opinion, let's head back to our main story. As Nelson Mandela continues to recover in hospital, President Jacob Zuma's government has been criticised for not keeping residents and the media duly informed on the health status of the iconic figure. But as we heard from Daniel Silke, an independent political analyst, these protective measures could be necessary.
Some degree of protecting Mr. Mandela is certainly necessary given the media circuses that we've seen in South Africa over the last few years. Not all the fault of the media, I might add, in some instances the fault of very bad communication by the South African government.
Independent political analyst Daniel Silke. So do you agree with South African government to keep Nelson Mandela out of the public eye? What's your opinion on that? Let us know by dropping us a line or two, simply by writing an email to feedback.africa@dw.de. If you prefer pen and paper, then send your letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And just before we go, here's another reminder of some of the stories we have covered for you in this edition of Africa Link. South Africa's presidency on Wednesday said the condition of former leader Nelson Mandela, who has been in hospital since December the 8th, remains unchanged. And an acute food shortage has hit parts of Cameroon after authorities closed parts of the border with Nigeria, citing security threats from Nigeria's Islamist sect, Boko Haram. And we have also been hearing about a young Zimbabwean musician lending his support through song in the fight against HIV/AIDS. That's all we had for you in this edition of Africa Link. If you wish to comment or give suggestions on the program, our email once again is feedback.africa@dw.de. And for more news and analysis, simply visit our webpage at www.dw.de/Africa. I'll be back same time tomorrow for another edition. Make a date with me if you can. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, take care.